Welcome to the DevCon Archives, featuring top sessions from the latest DevCon, which took place in Bangkok in November 2024. These episodes spotlight some of the best talks from the largest Ethereum developer conference, showcasing the technical advancements, mission, projects, and novel ideas shaping the Ethereum ecosystem. All talks have been recorded. You can find them on archive.devcon.org. Let's dive into today's featured talk.
Hello, everyone. Well, thank you for joining us. We are here to discuss about how intents or intents are reshaping the user experience in DeFi. And from simplifying complex operations or complex transactions in the blockchain to increasing security and, and improving decentralization. So I'm very happy to be here, and I'm very happy to be joined by this group of experts who are collaborating with leading protocols on this matter. So if it's okay for you, we can start with introductions, brief introductions from all of us. I will let you start, probably. Sean, do you want to start? Yeah.
Hey. Okay, cool. Hey guys, I'm Sean. I work at Orbs. I've been in the space since 2018, doing a bunch of stuff. I have no Web2 experience, so I've been doing it live since then, and just kind of learning as I go along. It's been a lot of fun. At Orbs, what we're building is kind of we kind of call ourselves a L3 for on-chain trading. What that actually means in practice is we build protocols for DeFi. So we have advanced order types for DEXs, so TWAP and limit orders. We have another protocol called Liquidity Hub that uses that's intent in nature in terms of it aggregates all the liquidity on chain. We use ParSwap as a good friend of ours for that, and then we're doing some stuff now with Perps as well. That's also intent based. So yeah, really excited. Glad to be up here, guys. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you, Julie. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yep. Okay. Hi everyone. Nice to be here too. Thanks for the invitation. I was Julie. I work at Mimic, and I'm in the whole partnerships, communications, PR part of the protocol. So at Mimic, we're a DeFi automation protocol, and what we do is we simplify day-to-day operations by automating. And what we're doing right now is we're launching our newest version, which is launching our protocol, and we would like to everyone to start trying and see the full experience of how it's like to automate on DeFi and make it easier for people to interact more and get more access to it, and instead of being like this complex idea that we have, and make it more like day-to-day and basically make it easier, yeah.
Cool, thank you. Thank you for joining. Dom?
Hey everyone, I'm Dominic. I'm the head of ecosystem at LiFi. We are a bridge and DEX aggregator, so generally a liquidity aggregation protocol. Our main usage is having any-to-any swaps across all the major chains and ecosystems. We support EVM, Solana and Bitcoin right now, expanding further into other ecosystems. We do have, DeFi itself is a B2B product, mostly integrated with big wallets and applications. And then it also powers Jumper.exchange, which is our own front-end interface, which is catered to end users.
Great, thank you. Thank you for your introductions, for joining us. Myself, I'm Agus. I'm leading the operations and the partnership teams at ParaSwap. ParaSwap, it's a DeFi aggregator, and we, not so recently, but it's a kind of new released our intents trading solution that it's built on top of Porticus, which is providing the intents infrastructure for this. And why is this important? for Paraswap. Paraswap is leveraging Paraswap Delta, the trading, the intense trading solution. And this enables our users to trade gasless and trade with MEV protection. It wouldn't be possible without intents. So it's not a coincidence that we are all sitting here because we are partnering with between all of our protocols to leverage intents and to bring better user experience in different use cases. So, having done these introductions, where probably we can start is we know intents will be or are tackling the most important or one of the most important challenges in DeFi, which is user experience. So besides tackling this issue, and when we simplify with intents complex transactions or complex operations, we are lowering the entry barriers for new users, and we are also lowering the existing barriers for existing users. So what I wanted to discuss with you is how are you seeing intents improving the user experience in your protocols? And from your perspective, which kind of barriers are we lowering for new users?
Yeah, so I think the first step is starting with like breaking down kind of like what are the parts of this like intent-based user flow, right? You already said it. For the most part, important parts of it is a gasless transaction. It is a signature-based transaction scheme. And then on the other hand, what is almost like equally used with the word intents is the term solver, which basically is some type of entity, call it a market maker, a routing mechanism, or whatever, that then is able to actually fulfill these complex order types or source this liquidity that we're talking about, right? At LeFi, where we're mostly interacting in a cross-chain environment, for us, the most important point probably is that gas abstraction. We're actually going to launch our own version of gas abstraction in the next 2 weeks, probably. And also, we are integrating a gas SIP into our routing and use that for gas refueling on other chains, which, if you're interacting in a cross-chain environment, is very important because you might want to trade on a chain that you've never been on, so you don't have any gas in your account there. So this is a very complex and difficult problem, or it used to be a very complex and difficult problem, as many of you probably know. So for me, those are kind of the most important issues that we can solve with intents. And then there's probably more complex use cases on top of that that these two teams are tackling, which, yeah, they can talk about.
Yeah, well, I can continue because I can take your point and reach in more use cases, which is basically what we're aiming by using the Mimic Infra and by partnering with you guys, is the possibility to scale on that and the whole decentralization. But it's really like important for the user to know what it needs to be done. So if you know what action you want to take, what intent, then all the rest can be taken care of. And that's what DeFi is about, and that's what we're aiming with this. Not only for users that know how DeFi works, but for those also that don't know about it, but want to get into. So if you know what slippage you want to set, what threshold you want to set, and that makes it much easier in the whole interaction.
Yeah, so for us at Orbs, we have, I mentioned it at the beginning that we have an on-chain sort of aggregator. It's for spot markets. And we actually integrate that directly with DEX UIs. So it's called Liquidity Hub. It's on QuickSwap, Spooky Swap on Phantom. If you guys remember that there's a Phantom chain and it's not just a wallet. I got asked that earlier. That's why I'm chuckling about it. As well as Thena on BNB. And so when users come to swap on these DEXs, we do an RFQ on the back end, on Orbs Layer 3, rather. We call it a back end. And that kind of abstracts the complexity of having users need to go to an aggregator and search for the best price themselves. In addition to this, we also have gasless transactions, as I think everyone else up here has mentioned. And I think these two things are really kind of the core, the underscoring of what we're doing.
Great. So it's not a coincidence that the three of you mentioned abstracting complexity from users from different ways in order to make their lives easier and maybe not have them deciding on things that they don't care that much, or most users don't care that much. And myself personally, I have found myself in not having gas on the destination chain when bridging, and that blocking me from doing whatever I was trying to do, having to set up lots of configurations that probably I don't care, or I prefer that someone else decides for me. And when using different DEXs, not having to maybe go to a meta aggregator, but rather going through something like a liquidity hub, so I can get a better quote. And so I think we are on the path with intents on different protocols in different ways to simplify this experience. What I see from my personal view is I see lots of protocols that are adopting intents. And this is kind of, it has become a race of speed of innovation versus scalability. So deploying intents or implementing intents, it's not easy. It's not something that can be done from one day to the other. So what I wanted to ask you is about your point of view regarding the speed of deployment, the speed of innovation versus the scalability, and how to design scalable solutions that can leverage intents in the future. Have you found trouble implementing this? Have you found trouble in finding scalable solutions, and how did you solve those?
Yeah, I can start. I think the way that we look at that is probably the one where there's the most problems with this, as our like frame of reference is kind of a multi-chain environment. And I mean, it starts with just like, it starts with finding something that can work on all the chains that you want to be on, right? And let's maybe start out just talking one execution environment. Let's say we just stay within the EVM. Even then, that means if something like LeFi is, you know, expanding to new chains, and we use something like Gasip, for example, to have this kind of like refuel feature, that means that Gasip needs to scale with our own expansion, right? So we are mostly an aggregation protocol, so we don't build things ourselves necessarily, but more and more so we found ourselves in kind of that tough spot where you have to start building things yourself, or you have to build something that's more similar to a marketplace, which is kind of like what Paraswap is building, to attract solvers, to attract agents that can execute these transactions across many, many chains. So when we start from there, obviously we have certain pathways that are very crowded, right? Like every solver wants to solve on Base. Every solver wants to solve on Arbitrum. Every solver, you know, eventually wants to solve on like Barrachain or Monad whenever these chains are launching. For the more long tail of chains, that's probably more difficult. There might have to be different solutions of how to do that. And then the other issue of scalability that comes to be is like, how do you do that across different virtual machines? And how do these agents and the protocols that have the marketplaces start talking to each other across these environments? And then we have to go into something like message passing. We have to go into something like building multiple versions of these protocols. So I think when it comes to this end of the scalability, we're still pretty early, and nobody has like really figured that out yet. But if you think about it, we just talked about how these intent types basically make the ecosystem much easier to use, where ecosystems where you don't have all these things yet, you kind of, it's kind of the difference between a transaction and intent, right? It's like you have to find a pathway yourself still, which makes it like much harder to navigate these. So yeah, I think it's in some ways, if somebody can build something that abstracts all of that away across all these different environments, that's probably like the holy grail of that entire market of like liquidity routing, but it's a really, really tough problem to solve.
Okay, so you are focusing on the composability of that ecosystem. Besides improving the external experience for user, you are also focusing on improving this composability for the protocols that need to connect to.
Yeah, like just think about something. As I said earlier, we support Solana, EVM, and Bitcoin, but that also means that currently the user has to use three different wallet types because you need a Phantom wallet, whatever, on Solana, and then you need a Bitcoin wallet, and need whatever you're using on the EVM. The end game of this is to have some kind of signature abstraction game that allows you to basically compose signatures across multiple chains, probably with something like ZK proofs or MPC or whatever you prefer cryptographically. And that's kind of like the next level of intense in a way, because that's kind of what you guys are doing, right? You abstracted it on the EVM, but the next level is how do you make it even more composable across these different ecosystems?
That's correct.
Okay, so the way we see it is more about if you want to like lower that barrier entrance, maybe you need to think it as, for example, if you're in a room, you want to communicate to another room. If you feel like two isolated things, right? If you find a way how to communicate with those, like, then you can communicate to others too, right? And you can get to more and more and more places. So it's about looking at that connector, and it maybe happens all the time with all of our clients we have and all the people that want to say, hey, I want to automate, I want to do this and that. We act as intermediaries to the solutions. So intents for us are that looking for that path, that execution plan that you want to have, and seek the best way to get all those connections and get to more and more use cases, scalability, centralization.
So kind of standardizing those connections. So using the same connection that you have from one room, going to the example, from one room to the other, but also to connect other partners for you, for example.
Yeah, it's kind of like know-how we have in, like it happens with some protocols, and then we can like have the experience that we have with one and then standardize it in order like to reach more and ask like more information on that.
Great.
Yeah, so for us, I think the biggest thing was for Liquidity Hub. We'd have DEXs that really, really want to integrate the protocol on their UI, but then, you know, when we look at the actual chain itself, there's maybe only one or two solvers there that are facilitating orders on the chain. So for something like Polygon, where we have everyone added, Odos, Open Oyster, Paraswap, obviously, and off-chain liquidity as well. It's like very easy. But like what Dom is saying, when you go to these like further and further out chains where there's just not as much of an ecosystem built up there, there's only so many pools that you can reach, and then taking that one step further, to bring off-chain liquidity into this marketplace is even like another crazy step, and requires a lot of development effort and obviously capital. So from our perspective, that's been the biggest and most challenging hurdle.
But I think it actually makes sense that you start with the let's call it the low-hanging fruit, where that you can integrate easily and fast, and then you move into the more complex, but probably the ones that will that you select or you prioritize the ones that will be adding more value to your ecosystem, and you focus on implementing those. Thank you. If I may add here something that I think it's important for scalability, and it's a concept that we didn't mention, it's the concept of modularity. So I think modularity is going to play an important role in the intense scaling. For example, the infrastructure that Paraswap is leveraging to enable intents, it's a modular infrastructure. What does this mean? It means, for example, that the swap module that Paraswap is leveraging to enable intents it's a module that was built exactly with this use case, exactly for this use case. If we want to enable other modules, then we need to develop that module, and it's probably easier to escalate things by module rather than just escalating all the use cases at once. So I think modularity will play an important role, because you can think about modularity, then you can start connecting the different modules, and I go to the connecting rooms that you were saying. If you start connecting modules and each module enables a use case, let's say swap module, bridge module, cross-chain module, you can start mixing the usage of this module to enable different features on the different protocols UI. So I think that would be an important concept that at some point it's going to be more spread around the Intents ecosystem. I want to take you out of your protocols and make a question that it's more related to the general experience through Intents. So when we talk about simplifying user experience, taking the specifics out of the hands of the users and leaving that to a third party, I kind of feel related to a Web2 experience, where we have centralized entities, centralized actors that decide for the user, that take complexity out of users, but decide for users. So at some points, I found myself talking about Intents and remind me of the experience we have in Web2. So how do you think we should find the balance or the sweet spot of making users' experience better, easier, but not losing the decentralization that DeFi and Ethereum have already established as a kind of a standard?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, if we go from like the solver-based system, generally, it takes a lot of risk out of or away from the user, because the way that these systems usually work is a solver basically more or less instantly pre-fills the transaction that the user requests in kind of like an RFQ system, as you said. And then on the same chain, obviously, they're usually more or less atomic, so there isn't too much risk there. Once you go across multiple chains, there might obviously be some kind of finality problems. And now the solver takes on these finality risks that the user had before. And the solver, as a more professional market-making entity, should be better equipped to basically calculate this finality risk and then settles through some type of, you know, intent settlement layer mechanism. I think from that perspective there isn't too much risk for the user. I think where the risk becomes more prevalent is when we start thinking about competition. As you said earlier, on a chain that is smaller, there might only be like one or two solvers. Okay, one solver, I think everybody here can see the problem with that. It's basically a monopoly, so the solver can just quote you. And obviously, he has an information advantage over you. Unless you're very sophisticated, you don't really know if that price you're getting quoted right now is a good price for you or not. Unless you go back to basically doing all the research that you would have to do yourself in a transaction-based system. But even, let's say, if there are two or three solvers, the problem of collusion could still be pretty prevalent, where the solvers just basically talk to each other and they're like, hey, look, let's all just like quote a little bit higher price and we skim some money off the user and then we share that in the end. So for solver systems to actually sufficiently work, we need a competitive market, and creating a competitive market is a question of, you know, demand at the end of the day. If there's enough demand, then enough solvers will show up. But it also on their end, it becomes about like scalability of infrastructure again, where, you know, demand might pop up anywhere at any point in time. And a lot of that is like uninformed flow in a sense. So I think DOX can look good, but it's kind of like getting scammed in a taxi, you know? You really have to know the environment. Like if you guys grab a taxi here in Thailand, you're not a local, you don't know the prices, how would you know if you're getting scammed right now or not?
So you would put the focus in decentralizing the whole infrastructure, I would say, or increasing the competitiveness of the
competition, increasing the competition. I think, yeah, competition is more important than decentralization from a perspective of, you know, like competition could also be great between tree solver if the system is designed well enough that they cannot collude with each other. So yeah, designing the system in a way that keeps everybody competitive with each other is very important.
Makes sense. Thank you.
The way I think about it and short experience I have, like, well, recent experience in Web2 and now Web3, is that user experience is really important in Web2, but for Web3, it's getting there, it's improving a lot, but if you need to risk something, will be that, and the main focus should stay on transparency, and that's been with decentralization and everything, but it's really important to be transparent, and if there's competition and everything like keeps going forward and we improve and we get better in models and everything, I think that that's like the most important thing that we should focus. And especially when we're doing this kind of things, right? And it's like money from others, and you could put the Uber taxi example, and the taxi we know it really well, the Uber not so much. So it's like DeFi, we don't know it so well. So if we keep transparent, and it's better, and it will get you more users eventually.
One more point that I just realized, adding onto this, is the advantage that blockchains still have is once the transaction is settled and inscribed in the blockchain, it's there. So that data will be available forever. So unlike Web2, where maybe we have that kind of obscured and we don't really know, somebody could actually go in and kind of prove to you later on that you were getting scammed. And this is a huge advantage, obviously, that blockchains have over, like, as an open system, over maybe the more closed systems in Web2.
If I may compliment what you are saying, it feels a bit like we are simplifying and taking complexity out of users, but at the same time we need to be transparent about how we are building the protocols, which can end up being more complex for the user to understand than the initial, let's say, slippage or gas setup. So I think the point here is that we need to make sure that the infrastructure or the ecosystem is decentralized, or it has enough competitors so they cannot collude or they cannot screw the users. But it's more for making sure that the user experience is going to be good rather than to explaining that to everyone or to the users. Because I don't know how we would explain how a complex system like an intent system worked to a retail user, for example. I don't know how we would find the way.
I think UX is super important, and like I don't think anything that I don't think necessarily that, you know, you never want to, at least with intents, you don't want to ever compromise that UX that users have now, at least. You know, you have a better price, so you want to keep the better price, and you have this better user experience. It's better than having to search for it yourself. It's much easier for everyone. I would say, just to add on to what everyone else has already kind of echoed, but just the way that these protocols are designed to make sure that they're open, that there's clear documentation, so that there's not, it's not like an airline industry where the barrier to entry is like, you know, not possible. So, you know, if someone wants to be a solver, if someone wants to route liquidity, if a market maker wants to earn money this way, that there's clear documentation, and that the protocols are set up to be open, you know, and have these ethos that we're kind of discussing, and decentralization, so that they can easily do so.
But I think like a pattern that emerges here is like, you just said, we're taking complexity away from the user. We're giving the complexity to the system. So, you know, there's no, in alchemy, there's like the concept of an equivalent exchange. You know, you can't just like gain something without losing something else. So you can't just make UX like super good without increasing the complexity somewhere else, right? But what we're basically doing here is we're taking that complexity into the back end. And as you said, for example, like you want to keep that system open. Okay, that sounds great. Like, right, we all want open systems. But now what happens, for example, if you keep the system open, a solver says, I'm going to fill this order, and then doesn't fill it, right? So like that means now if you keep the system open, that means you need to implement something like slashing. And then it becomes kind of a game of consensus where you're almost basically, you're kind of building a blockchain at the end of the day. You're rebuilding consensus into that in some way because you have agents that are kind of like validators in a sense, and they do certain tasks, and you have to make sure that they can be like properly incentivized and then also properly, slashed or whatever if they misbehave. Which, I mean, in some ways it's great because it means you can add a token onto the stuff at some point, you know?
But you went from infrastructure to kind of economics of the protocol.
Yeah, that's what I do sometimes.
we have a few minutes left, and I want to leave some time for questions. So my last question would be: I believe that the intense ecosystem is just starting, so we're probably going to see a lot of innovation in the future. So where do you see this innovation happening in the short to mid-term? And also, how do you balance this with security risks that may come with new features, new products, or new improvements that Intense can bring?
So looking ahead, I think we're now kind of building at Orbs. Anyways, we think that the next thing is on-chain perpetuals. If you look at like spot market to sex volumes, it's like I think about like I don't remember off the top of my head, but it's significantly more than
it's huge.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah, it's huge. On DEXs, it's much larger than the percentage of perpetual trading happening on DEXs. Which is about like 1%, and the other 99.9% is on centralized exchanges. So we think that there's like one, there's a huge market opportunity here. People want to trade perps on chain because you know there's a lot of counterparty risks that you have with sexes. I don't think we need to go down memory lane. So we can skip over that for now. But yeah. So I think that for us, this is kind of where we're headed in this direction. In terms of security risks, it really just depends on the protocol at the end of the day. So, yeah.
Is that kind of an alpha that you're giving?
You could take it as that. It depends on how you want to look at it. I saw something on Twitter that was like, I think it was like the GMX model is like some of the pools are getting like locked or something as we're in like an up-only market. Intents are potentially the way that it's going to be. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of builders around it still. So yeah.
Cool. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to bring a concept that eventually was going to be in our conversation. It's going to be AI. And with Nimic right now, we're building a three-layer protocol with intents and AI. And the idea is to create the best execution plan in order for the user to later have the control and like delegate what you want to do and everything, but then you have the control to sign and then execute it. So that's the main role in security that we have, and super important because we want to give the user that control, but we also have all the track record from before. We've been in the market for 3 years. We know how stuff is done, and we know how's the best way to, with the Mimic safeguards, to have it all like backed up and making sure the user doesn't need to worry about that. Because of course, it's a concern and everything, but it's like you want to have someone that's got your back. So that's like the main thing for us, and that's what we're building right now. And then we're launching the protocol because we're a business-to-business model, and we've been with that, and we're going to continue with it. But we want to give the opportunity to more users to build on top of the protocol and connect and be able to do this stuff. Yeah.
Do we have a date for the launch of the protocol?
It's going to be next year.
Okay.
You can check our socials, and we're going to be sharing more information. Sorry, great. I'm from comms, so of course I'm going to say that.
But yeah. Okay, thank you.
But yeah, it's coming soon, and it's going to be good.
Cool. You are the last one to give us some alpha.
Okay. I think the alpha for any type of protocol that is within the interoperability space is pretty much the same. I feel like every protocol is working on some level of first chain abstraction. That's something that we're looking into. I do not really like the term chain abstraction itself. I think it's more like chain agnosticism, because chain abstraction means that the end user doesn't care about the chain at all. But with the current state of crypto, that's not really true. Users do usually still care what chain they're on, for either tribal reasons, for reasons of wanting to farm something, for security reasons. I think we want to at least give users, and that also means companies that work with us, the ability to be opinionated about completely abstracting this away or just partially abstracting this away. And then the other thing that I talked about earlier a little bit was going into virtual machine abstraction. And that to me is the end game. Actually, having a unified experience of accessing all of the crypto world. As stated, probably some kind of proving schemes, hopefully ZK proofs becoming cheaper, is going to play a huge role in this. And I think in the next, let's say 18 months, we're going to see the first truly unified accounts. People use the word unified account right now, but it's really just an EVM balance. But unified account across all virtual machine environments.
Great, thank you. I think I'm the only one missing to give some alpha, but AS is also related to AI. So AI agents are part of our roadmap. Think of an AI agent as an entity that can execute complex strategies in favor of the user. So imagine DCA on a certain token, so be able to buy in at certain points of time, and doing this leveraging the security and the decentralization of intents. So we are also going into AI through intents. So I think we have a little gift for you. We prepared a POAP for the talk. I hope there are some POAP lovers here. So if you have the POAP app, I think you can scan this QR to get a memory of this panel that you just attended. So besides thanking you for attending this panel, I want to also thank you, the three of you, because it was a very, very good talk. And now maybe we can have some questions, if there are some.
Hello. My name is Jason, and the topic about the intent thread is very interesting. I'm very new here, and I just have one question: is that when you do kind of intent trading, does it mean that you shift the on the kind of risk of centralization to the back-end system, and as I know, using back-end is quite using backpack end in the system will bring the best user experience in trading, but it will bring some downside. And I just want to hear more about it because it's very important to us to improve our user experience. Do you get my question?
If I got it correctly, it's about you're asking if we are leaving the centralization for the back end. Is that the question?
That's my question.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it depends what you mean here. I think every intent system is at the end of the day an aggregation system, and every aggregation system obviously strives to be the sole owner of order flow. If you imagine there to be one of those systems that would be better than all the other ones, and obviously if you're talking from a solver perspective, some of these systems are going to have more network effects than others, then yes, there is definitely some kind of centralization risk that a winner might take this entire market. But the thing is, as we said, this backend will probably be some type of chain with some type of consensus mechanism. So if you look at it from that perspective, it's more of a competitive system. But yes, in terms of an API, you would access probably a single API to get quotes from the system.
If I may add there, I think that there will be improvements on the decentralization of the intents existing systems. I think that today it's difficult to fully decentralize an intent system, mainly because of the risk that we described here, that you cannot ensure that suddenly from one day to the other you have 1,000 solvers doing whatever they want on the system. But I think it's going to be progressive. So today we are here on the decentralization. The intent system are going to slowly start to decentralize the different parts of the backend until we find a solution that it's completely or almost completely decentralized. I highly doubt that at some point you won't have any API to access that it's not centralized, but I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Thank you for the question.
So we have two more questions here. So the next question is, are intents the future of all of DeFi, or are there use cases where smart contracts are still useful? Any of you can take it.
I think both can coexist. Both use cases might be able to coexist. There are today some use cases, flash loans, for example, that might not be a good fit for intents or how the intents systems are working today. But I think at some point there is going to be interest or prioritization of these kind of different use cases, but it's going to be one by one. So I think they might coexist in a world where both use cases can still have.
I actually think they have to exist, right? Because liquidity is still going to be in Uniswap, unless it's an off-chain, unless everything becomes an off-chain RFQ system, which might happen. But even then, let's say you want to borrow some money, then you have to go to Aave. You want to do some kind of yearn type of vault stuff that you like. Basically, intents and smart contracts are they're not really connected in that sense, right? Smart contracts are protocols, or nowadays also accounts, if we talk about account abstraction and something like that. The intent really is just the way how you express your preferences. That is what an intent is, but that isn't necessarily connected to smart contracts in any way. Smart contracts are how we build expression of something on chain. It's just a programming language thing at the end of the day, which the other thing is what do I want? It's a preference expression.
Okay, so we have one more question. Are Merkle trees the answer for cross-chain intentions? Again, anybody can take
it.
honestly, yeah, so I don't have an opinion about the how to solve the cross-chain intentions.
I mean, Merkle trees are probably going to be part of it in expressing certain things. As I said earlier, I think the answer for cross-chain intentions are probably ZK proofs.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So we have a question from there.
Just a question. Like, do you see intents in anything beyond DeFi? Other than DeFi, have you seen anything, any intents being used beyond DeFi?
I have heard about some use cases, but all theoretical. I mean, I never saw them really implemented, but I heard and I've been pitched about some like real world use cases where you can, I don't know, rent, for example, an apartment with through intents. But I think we're not there yet. I'm sure that we are not there yet because we are not seeing them being implemented in that way. But I think it can work for other stuff besides DeFi, besides lending, borrowing. Besides those use cases, I think they might work at some point. I think the technology has to evolve in order to take it to other places.
I mean, if you think about it, like Skyscanner is an intent-based application. You go in there, you put a flight in, and it gives you. I mean, the difference between intent in some ways would be the way we see intents is like the solver just fills you the best one, and like in Skyscanner, you get a couple of options of flights. But in similar ways, how LeFi, for example, works today is you go in and you say, I want to go from asset A on chain A to asset B on chain B, and we still give you options. We just don't pick. Like, basically, we're not an opinionated solver as to we don't give you one option. We give you multiple options that you can pick from, but that's still, you still give us an intent, and we process that intent. And, like, every type of aggregation protocol in Web2 more or less works in the same way. Like, I want to buy an insurance, and then an insurance aggregator gives you, you know, a couple of options. So, like, intents are not in any way Web3 specific. They're just, like, a way of solving user experience.
I think doubling down on your example of Skyscanner, something that intents might solve, for example, is I want to travel to this destination for this amount of time, and I want to stay in these places and have the whole solution built for you. Like book your airplane tickets, book your hotel, book the stuff that you want to do, and reserve your dinners or lunches in restaurants. That would be like the ideal world of an intents. I think it might happen at some point, but I don't know when or how.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you can say something, because that's kind of the AI use case at the end of the day.
The Skyscanner thing was, yeah. I used to use it like all the time. But yeah, I mean, an intent is an intention. I mean, it depends on what context it is, but DeFi abroad and other like cases, yeah, we're not there yet, I think. We'll see. But do you want to say something?
I think we're good.
We agree. Say goodbye. Yeah.
So any more questions? We have one more minute here. If not, we can thank the speakers again. Thank you so much for the wonderful talk and
thank you.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to visit archive.devcon.org to watch and listen to all the other DevCon talks. We look forward to seeing you next time.